Hi, and welcome to our Doc Industry Podcast, season number 5. Here's your podcast about creative documentary and animated film industry. It's in collaboration with our dear friends, the Programmers of Color Collective and What's Up with Docs. A big shout out to our partners, supporters, and contributors. Check them out. And hey, it's good to have you here. Enjoy your conversation. Here is Doc Industry Podcast, season number 5.
Hello and welcome to the Doc Exchange XR annual podcast edition with me, your host, Weronika Lewandowska. I am the curator and coordinator of the Doc Exchange XR conference with Prototyping Zone and Showcase Program, taking place soon in Leipzig on October 31st and November 1st. Here you can catch a glimpse of what awaits you at our event. And I warmly invite you to immerse yourself in this special journey through spatial sound. This episode, I am joined by my guest co-host, Oliver Cadell. Oliver is multi-award winning Emmy and Golden Reel nominated sound designer, recording and mixing engineer, and the creator and host of the Immersive Audio Podcast, which partners with this episode. Hello, Oliver, and welcome to your debut.
Hi, Veronica and the listeners. I'm delighted to be here today joining you on this special episode. Well, the topic of our conference and this episode is indeed shaping the soundscape, the role of spatial audio in extended realities, films and arts. And we're excited to introduce our two special guests, Aili Nimura and Anna Monte. Aili, Anna, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Whereabouts in the world are you tuning in from?
And I'm in Seattle, Washington.
I'm in the south of Germany, in Heidelberg.
Before we kick off our discussion, Anna, Aili, can you please fully introduce yourselves and tell our listeners how you got into spatial audio?
I started in spatial audio. I grew up with music all around me. I studied cello and voice growing up in France in conservatory. But I really found spatial audio when I went to Wesleyan University and studied experimental music. And that's where I really found influences in John Cage and Alvin Lucier, and started working with physics and acoustics as compositional material. And around that time, my sister was also working in virtual reality. She does all the visual side. I do all the audio side. So it's a fun pair. And she's really the one who introduced me into the field. And that's how I got interested in technology and was lucky enough to do an internship at Mach 1 in New York and meet people at Bose working on augmented reality. And the technical director, Dylan Marcus, was super encouraging of me getting further into my technical skills and in prototyping. So following that, I went to Aalborg University in Copenhagen, where I studied sound and music computing and was able to get deeper into spatial audio. And I spent 6 months on the west coast of Denmark at Bang & Olufsen working on spatial audio prototyping. And that was really an incredible experience. And that sort of catapulted things. And I ended up in Seattle, Washington, working at Microsoft on their metaverse platform, Mesh. And since I had done my my master's thesis on virtual acoustics for voices, it was sort of a natural transition into focusing on voices in the metaverse. Maybe this is, by the time this comes out, I will have started my next step at Meta, working on spatial audio prototyping as well over there. But that's sort of my transition from art and experimental music and composition deeper into spatial audio and prototyping.
Thank you very much. Anna, how about you?
I started with music production a while ago. I studied in California, California State University in Chico. Where I studied recording arts and actually came across sound design on my last semester. I took a course that focused on sound design and actually was just called Audio for Video. And I just fell in love. I'm like, what is this thing? I can make a living doing weird sounds all day. I'm like, okay, this is exactly the path I want to go into. So once I graduated with my bachelor, I started looking for a master's and found a film academy in Germany, in Ludwigsburg, where I studied sound design, did my master's in sound design, and still blows my mind that there's so little schools in general where you can actually study focused on sound design. Like, there's not a lot of film schools that have a sound department where you can study, which still blows my mind for an audiovisual medium. But that is the reality. And one of the few schools that offer sound design as a field of study is where I went to. In short, after I graduated, a year after, I met my business partner by coincidence. I was looking for a studio space to open up a studio. And I met Daniel, who is still my business partner. We've been doing it for 8 years now and started exchanging some ideas. And he told me about this weird thing called ambisonics, which a lot of people have heard the word now, but it wasn't the case back then. And I'm like, MB, what? What is that? It was just being at the right place in the right time, because 2016 is when YouTube started uploading 360 videos. And it's like, oh, what is this amazing thing? Look, I can turn the cell phone around. And it's so amazing that the image turns. But hey, the sound, yeah, it's only stereo. Like, that doesn't work for this medium. And Dan is like, well, have you heard about ambisonics? And started telling me, what is ambisonics? And back then, YouTube still wasn't supporting any kind of spatial audio in their platform. And he's like, hey, I could bet that in 6 months, that's going to be the format, because that's the perfect format for 360 videos to have 360 audio. And yep, we should have made a bet. But you guessed it. 6 months later, that became the official format for 360 video. So that has been our journey. And since then, we've expanded into other formats that require spatial audio and thinking about things a little bit more outside of the box and not formats that are already out there. So we expanded into full dome cinema, which is basically 360 like in VR, but you watch it in a movie theater. And I think a lot of you have heard about the Sphere in Las Vegas. And then we expanded into doing sound for themed attractions, which also require a little bit more of immersive formats. And XR in general, we're still at our original format. So that's where we are right now.
I'd like to start by asking, how do you work with spatial on your regular basis?
So how do I work with spatial audio on a regular basis? It really depends on where I'm at and the job I'm working on. It could be, anything from taking something at a very raw stage in MATLAB and trying to make it function on some kind of hardware prototype. Or it could be anything from converting sounds into spatial haptic feedback or something like that. But I would say, by and large, I work in Unity, either building on top of Unity or prototyping with Unity to create some kind of either virtual or location-based experience. That said, I think the most effective way of working with spatial formats and spatial audio is to be super flexible. So it does also happen that, I'll record in a spatial format and process it, bring it down, and even bring it into a game engine or something like that, but perhaps not in the way that one would expect. So it's a lot about what type of format or what type of platform or engine is going to enable me to produce a certain effect, as well as what limitations do I have based on the product or the prototype I'm working on, what hardware do I have access to, and therefore what software can I use?
Yeah, as far as the three branches that we have, it really depends on what kind of project it is, obviously. When we first approach a project, at this point, there is no standard for full dome cinema, and every full dome cinema is different. So it really depends. The transferability between cinemas are really difficult because you produce it in a certain format. We sometimes do 7.1.4. Sometimes we do ambisonics so that we can have more flexibility, like higher order ambisonics. But the transferability is really, really difficult, unlike in regular cinema that you can just easily transfer from one to the other because you have a standard now. As far as attractions, I think I'd like to go some steps behind. We get very stuck on spatial audio being so focused on technology. And of course, you need technology for it to work. But I think it's important as a first step to kind of step away from this speaker-based thinking. Yeah, but is it a 5.1 or is it a 2. whatever? And just kind of like think of it as space. I have a space. How do I want to fill this space? And then you start thinking of the technology. But as far as the concept goes, I think it's important to take some steps back and think, how can I fill the space? So that's how we do it with themed attractions, right? Because you can also have spatial information also just using one loudspeaker. Maybe if I have a scene that there's a little frog doing ribbit ribbit in the corner, that's also giving me information. So I think that's really important as a first step to like, how do I want to tell the story using sound? And then you take the next step, which is the challenge because there's no standard also in themed attraction. But it's really just really nice to think of each scene and how we want to tell the story sonically and then take the technical step of, okay, which speakers can I put where? How many channels do I have and all that stuff? So at Delta, we like doing all the steps because that's really important. There's a lot of parks that don't think about the content. So you have them just spreading loudspeakers around and then you're like, yeah, but I just need the one bird peeping in the corner. And this scene has like 20 loudspeakers. And then the next scene, which is a pirate battle full of action, we have 2 loudspeakers. So it's really important to kind of think along the way, the technology part also with the content to make sure that you have the best result in the end.
What are the key challenges you face in your line of work when it comes to the integration of spatial audio for extended reality or an immersive experience that may involve both fully digital and speaker-based deployment?
Yeah, so I think this is something that we encounter so much in spatial audio. I think no matter what context you're in, I mean, unless maybe you're very, very, very focused, but whether working with a mix between speaker systems or speaker ecosystems, as well as headphones, you're always kind of working within an unknown space. What does the user have at home and in what contexts are they? So this is one challenge that you kind of can get into when working with spatial audio for headphone and speaker development. And I would say the solution to this is to start thinking more about envelopment and user control, as well as letting go of a certain expectation and trusting the endpoint user as well. Currently, I would say the biggest challenge that I have in that context of managing different endpoint devices as well as, you know, open air speakers is in meeting scenarios, social VR, metaverse scenarios. This goes and spreads across different issues. So for example, whether your user is using a VR device and another participant in the experience is using a PC. This is a common difference. Or whether your users are wearing headphones or simply playing back over their computer speakers. We had this challenge a lot developing Mesh. How do we communicate to users when they're able to experience spatial audio and when they're not? How can they experience spatial audio? And sort of the explaining the trade-offs or explaining how they may not all receive the same experience based off of whatever endpoint they're using. This is a big challenge. I think, though, that this is something that we can welcome and leverage, even though that also creates sometimes some limitations. One of the issues that we've encountered, for example, is demoing virtual reality, social VR in a room with many other participants, where, for example, you're showing a scenario in VR, but you have to turn off some of the spatialization of the other virtual participants because they're also in the room with the other people who are demoing the experience. Things like that can cause some issues and sometimes impact the end result that the user is experiencing. But I would say that that is oftentimes because we are demoing or demonstrating some of the content in a scenario that wouldn't be the absolute intended scenario. So yeah, I think that if you can start to think about mixing for envelopment and for effect, then we start to get into a territory where you can mix different endpoints in a more versatile way. And at the end of the day, we know that our users are going to be using different devices. So we can optimize for some, but we like to design for all.
That's a really great answer, Eileen. I really like that. It's a very good point because, this whole transferability, I think it's becoming a challenge. For example, the VR 360 kind of videos being transferred into a movie theater, like a dome, like that's really difficult if you do a mix that is made for headphones and then you have to transfer to loudspeakers. But if you already know, like, I'm going to have two different outputs, then you can kind of produce from the beginning. And I think that's not that different from linear, right? If you kind of know the different formats that you're going to be outputting towards. And with music is the same, the classical test it in your car kind of thing and see if your mix works. That's always a challenge. But I think the more we have this kind of transmedia stuff, that you have one production and it's going to be shown on, I don't know, I think the cardboard doesn't exist anymore. I haven't seen it for a while, but I've had people that want things to work on a cardboard and YouTube and, I don't know, an interactive app in the end for Oculus and then in the movie theater. And that's really a challenge if you don't think of those things from the beginning so that you know how your material will be transferable later. It's exciting to have a lot of outputs, but it's definitely something to think from the production side from the beginning, because otherwise it won't work, right? If you have something produced for a certain format, but then, yeah, let's try to output it into completely different formats, that's just not going to be optimal, I guess.
That's a really good point. Thinking about that really early on in the process is super important.
And I'm sorry to put the big theme out there, but money, right? Like, as far as producers go and how much budget, you can't just like, okay, I've done a mix. Yeah, just use that mix from whatever to work on the other, whatever. It's like, if you're going to have those different things, you need to understand it will cost more time, which means more money. And that's kind of important to have in mind when you budget things so that you're not surprised later. Like, yeah, by the way, remix it all over because I need it now for a dome. Maybe if you do it in higher order ambisonics to begin with, you have a little bit more flexibility. That kind of stuff, I think, is important to think about.
Yeah, and so that you don't have things cut also at the last minute because of overextension, you know, making sure that you've limited or scoped your endpoint devices in a way that you can handle in a very efficient way. Yeah, you're totally on the money.
On the money.
Spatial audio has a lot of possibility for distribution. And even from the comfort of our homes, we can have access to social experiences. And my question is, how do you approach designing audio experiences that foster meaningful connections? Can spatial audio help create more collaborative or socially engaging XR experiences?
I'm really curious to hear Anna's thoughts on this, actually working with a lot of the location-based and attraction experiences that she's been working with lately.
Should I start before you talk about the metaverse? I mean, from a very boring but not boring perspective, there are some studies coming out about how your brain is overloaded when the sound is bad. And obviously, like, that's Eileen's expertise as far as language goes and voice and communication. But obviously, if you have a mess going on and you can't separate the voices, and I mean, if you have also, we've done a VR, location-based VR with a group that we didn't have radios for people to communicate with each other. So you just see yourself as an avatar in the virtual world, but can't communicate. But then you also have the issue of if you were to have those microphones, it needs to be spatial, right? Because when you're in the virtual world, you need to know where that sound is coming from, and you need to have that separation in space, because that's just how we hear as humans, right? We hear in 3D. So the technology is just trying to repeat what the natural world does naturally. So I think as far as overload of information, having spatial audio is extremely important for communication, right? Otherwise, it's just a mess. But that's more Eileen's expertise. You can give a better answer than mine.
Yeah, sometimes it's called a cognitive load, and that's definitely something, especially, you know, in meeting scenarios or where you have a lot of voices in a space, you want to be mindful of, thinking about transferring some kind of social scenario into a virtual space in a situation where, speaking of endpoint devices, it's not just the playback system, but it's also your input system. Whether your users are have nice microphones like us, or are joining a meeting from their car, what have you, this is something that you need to start thinking about, and how you spatialize that. How do you monitor attention, focus, and things like that? So I would say this is an area I'm super passionate about, because I really do believe that spatial audio can help create more collaborative and socially engaging XR experiences. But there's a few ways that you can kind of optimize, even in very simple ways, for this type of communication. So I think this is something we'll talk about further at the conference. But, thinking about when you're designing a virtual world, how do you layer your soundscape, the real-time content, as well as your sound design, your room tone, all of this, a ducking system? How do you layer your soundscape in a way that optimizes for communication? How do you build that virtual environment and think about the avatars that are going to be inhabiting that environment in a way that actually serves a communication scenario? And this is maybe one of the reasons why you absolutely need an audio person in the room when you're working with designing the virtual environment. Sometimes, because we have the ability to create such imaginative spaces in XR, it's very easy to lose track of, okay, how does a user navigate with other participants to another part of the space? How much time does that take? If there is a hallway of a certain size, does that mean that you have to change the spatialization in that given virtual area in order to reflect a more optimal spatial audio experience in that transition area? So with that comes with delivering a system that allows both back-end designers as well as front-end users the ability to design or control that experience, as well as creating social features that will give your participants the ability to experience different types of communication. In that sense, a virtual environment allows you a lot of possibilities as a creator and as a designer or engineer. Can you perhaps think about different kinds of breakout scenarios or conversation areas, or perhaps you're working with media in a way that allows different types of communication in a virtual environment? And that would be different depending on the context, whether you're designing a virtual museum or whether you're designing a space meant for collaboration, for workshopping something, for demoing something to partners. And those are maybe more front-facing potential features. But then you can think about also how you're designing voices that are in that environment generally. Could you perhaps create some type of processing that further muffles voices in the background? Are you using the real-time input of users' voices, or could you perhaps use some pre-rendered Walla? How might you be able to generate that Walla in real time? And these are all sort of ideas that we've developed in Mesh over time to address these wildly different communication scenarios. I would say one of the biggest challenges also within collaborative and social XR environments is scale. So, if you're building an experience exceeding over a certain amount of participants, you are going to have to shard or create multiple instances of that virtual space and of that virtual environment. So then how can you use audio to give users a sense of who else is in the space? You know, this is something that I think a lot of social XR platforms are dealing with at the moment, is using audio to deliver that sense of co-presence, even when we have to actually split apart users. So yeah, a little bit of a long-winded answer, since this is so much of a key part of what I work with, but in so many different kind of like areas or layers or contexts of the social XR space, whether that's designing the tooling, setting up the experience, or trying to solve some of the more practical problems that we have.
Just something really quick. I think the talked about virtual acoustics before. And I think that's also super important, right? Because we have different users with different equipments. And I think that's also something that rips us from this the immersiveness of a virtual space if you also don't have acoustics that match. So I think that's super important. If you're I get really annoyed when you're talking to someone in a virtual space and they sound like they're in a church, but you're actually in a virtual bedroom. And then that kind of like, okay, I don't believe this, right? Because the sound is the one that's telling you, okay, I am in that space. So what you said about live voice processing or something like that, I think that would be really important also, because you actually want to have a pleasurable environment. And that's why a lot of people say, yeah, VR doesn't work. VR sucks, whatever. And a lot of it, if you think about it, if you take some steps back, it's like, okay, yeah, it's the technology getting in the way. And sometimes the sound also, where you're like, okay, why should I go to a meeting with 100 people where the sound isn't spatialized and I just hear a cacophony of voices? This is not a pleasurable environment. So that doesn't encourage me to go there and socialize with people. Just like in the real world, if you went to a restaurant that is playing super loud music and is super loud, you don't feel like going there either to go talk to people. So I think that would be really important for communication in general.
Yeah, if I could also just like respond to that, that's like an absolutely great point. This kind of like congruence between your virtual space and the acoustic experience that you're having. But I would also kind of in line with that, sometimes the spatial audio can actually hurt the social experience or take away from that social experience. And as painful as it is at times, I've actually had to sort of transform some of the ways in which I think about spatial audio in this meeting or virtual connection context, where it's how do we make something spatial but less spatial? Or where and in what way can we trigger moments where we actually are filtering out things. And of course, in some ways that is spatial audio, but it's a design process that is very, very different than what we might initially want to create. And it's definitely a trial and error of getting feedback and of actually understanding what is desirable in that social scenario. And the immediate reaction can be, let's just take away the spatial audio. And this is something we've heard a lot. And the challenge has been, how can I show or sneakily create spatial audio that is fitting in with that experience of wanting to hear everything in the room or not wanting to hear anything except this thing while making that feel natural and spatial. And a lot of the times that comes from actually not building an experience that immediately seems like, okay, this would be the processing that matches this space, and thinking, okay, actually in this social scenario, we need to change that that expectation a little bit, and that will be what feels more natural in the end.
Okay, so moving to creative process and balancing art and technology, Anna, can you share a specific project where physical environment significantly influenced your decision making when it comes to sound design choices?
Yeah, I think every themed attraction project that we do, the space is extremely important, not only from a design point of view, but also from the technical point of view, as far as how many loudspeakers do you want in that space? Is it a small space, a big space? Is there bleeding between the scenes? That's also something we've been trying to convince clients to think of acoustics for that kind of stuff, because that's not thought of, and that's quite the challenge. Is it a inside space, like a dark ride that you're inside, or is it an outside space that we had a couple of months ago? That was quite the challenge. It was a part of a park that was simulating the Alps. So we had animal calls coming from all over. But of course, within this park, you had other sounds that were coming from some other place. So there was a lot of outside bleeding. There's also a lot of the environmental noise that you need to think about. The ride itself, if the cart does some kind of noise, you have the people that speak or scream or whatever. But that's definitely, I would say, funny enough, even though you don't have a lot of like binaural rendering and all the technical stuff that you think about with spatial audio, doing stuff for themed attraction was the first time that I actually thought of spatial audio from this raw point of view of, I just think of a space. I start off with a space. Let's think of the space and how we can tell a story using this space. It's a really exciting area to work in. And I've read a lot of stuff from people that do sound for theater, because they actually do a lot of spatial audio without using the crazy technology, binaural rendering, whatever, whatever. They also think of space, right? They also think of where to position the loudspeakers, where the story will be told the best way. So I think there's a lot that we can learn from each other.
Your focus is on voice and sound interactions in the metaverse. How do you balance artistic expression with technical requirements when designing these experiences? For example, how do you ensure that AI-generated voices sound natural and engaging?
That's a good question, because a lot of times it doesn't feel very artistic. I would say the most artistic design that I would do is either if there's a musical element in the virtual space, I had to design a radio and come up with a bunch of music options for the music in the space, which is another way in which you need to consider a social scenario. What is sort of like generic but nice? What is sort of the aesthetic communication of the space? And this was maybe the maybe this is why I'm in this space, because I, while it was super fun, I actually did not enjoy composing that at all. What feels really artistic to me, or fulfilling from a spatial perspective, is actually working on the ambience of an environment, of a virtual space, and walking around that virtual space and having people be speaking in that space and have that complement each other perfectly. And when you have that match, that feels like, okay, this is creative. This is a mix of creating a space, but in a way that feels almost you know, they say like if no one says anything, you've done a great job. So I sometimes that can feel like the true artistic expression of this medium is, I don't want any feedback, and then I've done my job great. When it comes to balancing artistic expression as well. A lot of it is designing the tools that actually give our developers the ability to express themselves creatively. Someone who's making their own environment. A lot of the times I feel like our tooling assumes a certain end results from a user. And coming maybe from the experimental music like background, this is something I feel strongly against. I would love users to take tooling and break it and use it as not intended, or to come up with something that none of us thought was relevant. And that is something that I would like to be able to give people. With AI, I personally don't work a lot on AI-generated voices. I know that, you know, there's a lot of people looking to create a certain customer-facing AI, whether that's through virtual assistants or co-pilot in virtual spaces, or other forms of AI in virtual spaces. And that, I think, has a lot of potential, but specifically designing the AI voices is not something I work greatly on.
I would like to touch on the topic of accessibility. How can people who are deaf or hard of hearing benefit from spatial audio? In what ways can spatial audio be used to enhance accessibility, inclusivity, in XR or immersive environments? How do you feel about that? What's your experience with that?
So a lot of different ways in which we can work with accessibility, both for on a audio as well as visual standpoint. So again, a lot of that goes to back-end tooling. Can developers create waypoints, audio beacons? Can they accentuate or deliver sounds that will help users understand like collisions or spatial navigation? And there's a lot going on for not just deaf and hard of hearing, but also blind and visually impaired users. And I know that, you know, in the spatial audio world, we discuss this quite a lot, and there's a lot of amazing experiences and research there. From a very, very practical standpoint, we have to also take into account being able to turn off spatial. So if we have users that can't hear in one ear versus the other, that the spatial mix isn't actually taking away from their experience. So for example, being able to actually have the users have all of the content go in through one channel versus another, or to simply turn off, to just create a mono output. And that you can do on a Windows system, you can turn everything to mono. So that's a system level capability. But I would say there's this other aspect as well when it comes to accentuating the experience for users that are deaf or hard of hearing, which is the visual component and working with visual designers to enhance that audio experience. And there's a lot of, you know, games and examples of people doing this in a much more explicit way than I think we could all be doing. But representing that, I just spoke about this, you know, radio in the virtual space. In this example, we also have, you know, musical notes coming out of the radio. And I think visual effects can be, or animation can really, really enhance an audio experience in a way that feels more tangible, as well as, of course, haptics. So translating any kind of sound or even ambient sound into a haptic experience can be quite powerful.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, Eileen, the combination of different senses, and especially haptics, to kind of use it in a more intense kind of way and intentional, because you can definitely do a lot with haptics. I think also having the visuals help. I mean, I personally don't have experience with this, but I have seen some examples out there. For example, I don't know if you add subtitles, which sometimes can break the immersion aspect, but thinking of having subtitles that are more focused on spatial audio, like steps coming from behind and not just footsteps kind of thing. But I think also a dangerous thing in general, not only as far as accessibility goes, but also when the technology doesn't work for everyone, is to not have gameplay that is completely focused on localization. Because you just said, right, with one ear can't hear, then it's really difficult if you have a gameplay or an experience that is focused on find the whatever that comes from behind you. If they can't localize that spatially, then that's really difficult. So I think that's also part of the design, to think of things that aren't that focused on the spatial audio also is something to keep in mind, I guess.
Just a quick follow-up question to Aili, I guess. How do you see AI influencing the future of spatial audio, especially within interactive environments like a metaverse?
Well, just like AI is bound to influence any kind of virtual interaction, we can see instances of AI technology just getting incorporated into every element, whether that's creating the space, generating the space, or assisting users that are inhabiting that virtual space. I think in that sense, it's bound to just seep into every aspect of assisting scenarios that are ongoing. So both from the creating the virtual environment standpoint, as well as being an accompaniment to the social interaction going in that space. I mentioned, you know, virtual assistants. You know, this could definitely be something that's part of the environment. But, you know, personally, I really hope that we can continue to build AI that AI or AI-assisted experiences that actually are enhancing or supplementing human-to-human communication and ensuring, you know, a certain rigor of information and access, rather than, you know, making AI technology that is meant to not replace, perhaps, but that starts to incentivize a lack of human-to-human connection and interaction. I think we can create features that have both effects, that have both end results. And we need to be really careful about building the features that actually are enhancing that communication.
Looking ahead into the future, what developments in spatial audio are you most excited about personally? How do you think these new technologies will shape the future of immersive experiences in extended reality, field, films, and themed entertainment, if you will?
I think generative audio, I mean, it's not the super newest thing, but I think it's getting better. And I think that's really cool to have like real-time audio that can be changed. As far as us working with themed attractions, I think that would be a lot of the work that we do, we might lose to AI, but I'm not too worried about it. I think it does sound exciting if you can have certain environments and sounds that change with the public, I guess. I think that would be really exciting to have. I mean, it's not a new concept, but even to have I don't know, ambient sounds match people's emotions of the day or how the weather is doing that day and that kind of stuff, kind of mimic what's happening with the visitors at the park. I think that would be really cool. And I think we're going towards that direction. And a lot of ambient sound are already happening in game engines also for VR experiences that I, as a sound designer, don't have to go through the work of designing, I don't know, 12 hours of forest sounds, but they actually get generated in real time. I think that's really cool.
I'm excited about this becoming more ubiquitous. I've seen such a shift in just public knowledge and perception of spatial audio generally from when I started this was like a, oh, what is spatial audio, to, oh, yeah, that's something that I use or that I don't like. And that's exciting, even if people have, the fact that folks have some kind of perception of what this space is, I think means that we're developing technology in somewhat of the right direction, or eventually we will develop it in the right direction. In terms of what I'm most excited about, though, it's making or being able to access experiences that allow me to connect with my loved ones around the world. So my family lives all over the world, and this has been the case since I was born. And I think a lot of what I'm excited about, or the things that make me excited, is what allows me to connect with them in a more meaningful way. And I think we are on our way, and there's a lot of supplemental technology that keeps popping up, whether that's through glasses or that have multi-channel inputs on them, so that we're able to capture and then deliver content more easily to people that are across the world. And in that sense, I'm hoping that we can create technology that through sound, encourages us to have more empathy, understanding of one another. And this is something that we're definitely missing. And in social VR, I often say, like, we go into virtual spaces to talk to each other. We don't really go into virtual spaces to hear the awesome sound design, although we might. So I'm really excited about technology that we engage in order to communicate on a more fundamental level.
Finally, for anyone listening who is interested in getting into spatial audio, what advices would you give? What skills or knowledge are essential to succeed in this field?
What do you need to be successful? Well, it's kind of like being successful in any field. I think curiosity, being really curious, thinking about what you as an individual can bring to the space. I think, you know, both Anna and I think have had to think about that a lot. We've had conversations about this, you know, not necessarily when you don't necessarily fit the mold, what do you do? And not looking at that as a disadvantage, but rather as just something that you can take control over, even though it's hard sometimes. So there's sort of like the the more cheesy responses of like just, you know, pushing yourself and believing in yourself. But I never thought that I could, you know, go to engineering school or, you know, work at a big tech company. And, you know, just by being okay with failing, being okay with trying multiple times, that definitely is one of the keys, I think. As well as just communicating with, again, I feel like I just talk about communication, but, you know, connecting with people. You know, Anna and I connected ages ago just because I was super curious about, you know, her work and her experience. And Veronica as well, we've connected because you saw something I did and were asking further questions on that. So that kind of curiosity and connection and commitment to learning more about each other is pretty key to success. That's probably some of it. But from a spatial audio perspective, I think what Anna said is so true of thinking about the space first. It's something some kind of obvious to say, but that can be really easily missed. And I think you do that really well, Anna.
Thank you. That's definitely something I learned along the way. But I think it also came from a humbling place, because when you start off with spatial audio, and Daniel, my business partner, he started off his PhD at CERN and did his diploma on ambisonics. So the start of the company was already like a huge discrepancy. But I think with time, we learn also like, hey, there's a lot that I can add to the conversation. And I'm definitely coming more from the creative part. And I think working with spatial audio, you definitely get humbled because you think you're all that and I'm so experienced and whatever. But as soon as you let that ego go and you connect with people and you just like get inspiration from other people in the field and hey, I have this production, I don't know how to deal with this thing. To just, connect with people on that level and not be afraid to say, I don't have all the answers and I definitely need help and you know more about this than I do. Let's work together, and just having that curiosity. And with technology and social media, LinkedIn, all that stuff, there's no excuses. You just need to let your ego go and just connect with people like, hey, I saw you do this. That's awesome. Let's connect. Let's exchange ideas, which is what we did, right? Like through LinkedIn. Ailee, let's talk. Let's nerd out. And that's just really, really nice. And listen to Oliver's podcast. That's very important. If you want to get into spatial audio, let's do some advertisement here. It's really, really a great podcast with awesome topics. And Monica, another rock star of spatial audio, joined along the way. And I can definitely vouch for this wonderful podcast that they have put together.
Thank you for the plug. Appreciate that. All right. We've made it. We've made it to the end. Ailee, Anna, thank you very much, both of you, for talking to us today. It's been a huge pleasure and an insightful conversation. And I have no doubt that our listeners have gained some new knowledge learning from your expertise. Veronica, over to you.
Thank you very much. And dear listeners, you will have the chance to meet Oliver, Anna and Ailee at our Doc Exchange conference, where they will share more insights from their practice with spatial sound, examining case studies that will definitely pique your interest. More information can be found on our website, and we hope you will join us on site or online, and we can all meet there with open ears.
And if there's any of your listeners that do want to reach out to me, or I'm sure anyone here, about starting out in the field or, you know, a next step in the field, please do reach out. We're humans and here to help.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. On this note, take care.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.